Welcome to Table Talk on Disability Matters, where we continue the intentional conversations we started in person during 2015 on what matters to people with disabilities, their families, and support networks. We place the lens on the best of what is and explore the possibilities of what could be, while stimulating a different view on ability, diversity, and inclusion. Hello, my name is Rose Flagg, and I'm delighted to be hosting this podcast with three people who completed some research for innovative life options. The Table Talk discussion in this recording is about the benefits and outcomes of living a self-directed life with support if you have an intellectual disability and qualify for adult services. But first, a little bit of history and background to get us started. In the 1990s, the Minister of Family Services established the Working Group on Community Living with a recommendation that they create a pilot project to test innovative approaches to community living for people with an intellectual disability in Manitoba. As a result of the working group's discussions, a self-directed model called In the Company of Friends, referred to as ICOF or sometimes ICOF, was established and presented as a new option. Of course, administrative and management support for those choosing this funding model was necessary, and living in friendship every day, often called life, was established. Over time, the resources offered expanded beyond ICOF, and the organization changed its name to Innovative Life Options to reflect its expansion of services that include providing information, guidance, resources, facilitation, liaising with supports and services, to name a few. There were several individuals who utilized ICOF as the funding model when they had the opportunity to move from the Manitoba Developmental Center into a home in the community. Life continued their work with resource coordinators, training, and supporting the individuals that are called employers. Now, flash forward 15 years to the 21st century, near 2005. People involved in establishing and supporting this model observed how this option was working for people in a way that was really quite phenomenal. Life decided to do some research at that time. What the research did was confirm and validate a model that was person-centered, demonstrated a lived experience of the five guiding principles in the Vulnerable Persons Act, and offered a real choice for people. Now do another flash forward 15 years, give or take a month or two, and the conversation returns. The board of directors of the now Innovative Life Options begins to talk about the possibility of another research project. Everyone wanted to know, was it still as great as the original? And if so, why wasn't it being offered more? We had thoughts on that last question alone, but we really needed to showcase and share what's possible when we plan and support within a model that gives people self-agency. This podcast talks about the outcome of the research, and if we thought it was great at the turn of the century, we were blown away by what we found in 2020. I hope you enjoy listening to my dialogue with Dr. Shahin Shazdari and Dr. Margarita Camaranesi and Jerry Kaplan. Welcome to a podcast where today we're going to be talking about quality of life in the company of friends. In the Company of Friends is a support and funding model that is offered as an option for people with an intellectual disability qualifying under the Vulnerable Persons Act. With us today are three researchers who we hired to look at this model and to identify what the quality of life was for the people who use this. The first person I'm going to introduce is Dr. Shahin Shazdari, who was the main coordinator and overseer of the project. Welcome, Shahid.
Thank you. My role as the coordinator with this project, when Patty, the CEO of Life, contacted me, was the first thing to form the research team. So I contacted Kaplan Research Associates and Mr. Jerry Kaplan kindly accepted my invitation to join the research team, and Dr. Margarita Cameronesi, who joined the team. So it was wonderful to have them on board to be able to do this research with their expertise in program evaluation, but in mixed method research. And then we established a steering committee for the project. So we had some of the board members and a staff of LIFE who was working with us in a first determining the research objectives. So we came with three research objectives for the project. And then we developed the methodology. So we developed the research tools, the interview guides, and also the resources that were needed. For example, we needed to have the data on ICF participants that was analyzed to be able to describe their characteristics as the basis for the project. So the research project had three objectives. One was to describe the ICF model of funding and the employers themselves, and then to identify the strengths of this model of funding and areas for improvement, which we did that from the perspective of the key support network members, but also from the perspective of the employers themselves. And also we look at the outcomes and impacts of this model of funding. And a number of tools were developed to be able to address these objectives. So it was a very rewarding research. At the same time, it could have been challenging during pandemic because the request for the evaluation was made in 2019. And by the time that we were ready to actually take on the project, in 2020, we were in the peak of the pandemic. But everything worked out, and we were able to successfully complete the project and do the evaluation.
Thank you. And as I was listening, I was thinking, yes, I'm always reminded, there was this pandemic, which we're not completely out of, but it made it a much more challenging process, I'm sure. Next person is Jerry Kaplan, who I know is the data guy. So, Jerry, welcome, and tell me a little bit about your role and how that unfolded.
Yep. As you said, I've been called Mr. Stats or Stats Kaplan or whatever. Yeah. So my role is primarily to analyze the data that you have on your employers and include that in as part of the profile of who's participating. And also, we developed a questionnaire that was completed by the key network members, key supports, just analyzing that kind of data, and was a quantitative, qualitative survey. And we've got a lot of really good open-ended responses as well, and some very positive findings. And it's nice to have positive findings. You can't guarantee it, but it's nice when that happens. And so that was primarily my role.
It is nice when that happens, and we liked that it happened. Third on my guest list here is Margarita Cameronesi. See, I'm going to totally ruin her name. Margarita, it's say your name.
Margarita Cameronesi.
See, that's why I didn't do it.
It's Thank the you. R's.
It's the R's. Welcome. And what was your role in?
I came on board to mainly evaluate the quality of life using a mixed method approach. I think Shaheen chose me because of my experience with mixed methods, and we really wanted to include a standardized assessment, but also interview the employers themselves, which is really rarely done, especially with people with mild intellectual disabilities. Usually, the bulk of the data that we have, it's collected by proxy, which means that it's done by interviewing people who are close to them, but not them. So I think my colleagues would agree with me that this is really a strength of our study as well.
Excellent. Thank you for giving us a bit of an overview in what you each did in your roles. Sort of outlined what your research was. I think it's also important to know, for people who are listening, to know what exactly was some of your background. Like you, this wasn't the first time you've done research on this area. What experiences did you bring to the process? And I'll go back to Shaheen.
Sure. With my training in public health and community health sciences, I have three decades of experience in quantitative, qualitative research, and also program evaluation in the areas of community health, disability, and aging. Just to give you an example, over the past 6 years, I've been leading a long-term study called Evidence-Informed Planning and Evaluation of Community Transitions for Persons with Intellectual Developmental Disabilities that is done in collaboration with Santa Monica, which is the largest not-for-profit organization supporting over 2,000 Manitobans with developmental disabilities, autism, and acquired brain injury. With my training in public health and community health sciences, I have 3 decades of experience in qualitative and quantitative research and also program evaluation in areas of community health, aging, and disability. Just as an example, over the past 6 years, I've been leading a longitudinal study evaluating community transitions that are happening at Centamont, Centamont offering more community living options more intensely. So I am leading the evaluation of those community transitions.
Jerry, so you're the data nerd, as you've claimed yourself.
Yes.
Obviously, your background has been in gathering data over the years. How long have you been doing that?
Started in 88, which means I'm 34 years. So between us, we're 64 years. See how many years Margarita has. And I'm actually a social worker by background and training. A lot of sort of a generalist, so I do evaluations in a number of different sectors, healthcare, a lot of work within the addictions and mental health fields. And I've had involvement working with associations for community living and looking at experiences in terms of the group home model. So this was actually a nice change because this is outside of the group home model, so it's a different paradigm, and it'd be interesting to do some comparisons there. Research is never ending, so all opportunities to look at further research is preferred by especially researchers. A lot of quantitative, I also do qualitative, sort of multi-methods, focus groups, interviews, personal stories, that kind of thing.
Thank you. The fact that research is never ending, and we would love to do comparisons too, I got to be honest, because we happen to think that In the Company of Friends is the new paradigm that we would like to see shift. Okay, Margarita, what's your background? You have a doctor too, I forgot to add
yes.
that.
It's okay. Yes, so my background is in clinical psychology. I'm from Italy, if anyone is was wondering. That's why they are, the role in ours. And I moved to Canada in 2013, and in 2014 I started my a PhD in applied health sciences. So although my background is in clinical psychology, then I started conducting more interdisciplinary research. Shaheen and I met at the University of Manitoba, and we started working together during my PhD. My research is, I did some work with Shaheen, with persons with neurodevelopmental disabilities, but I'm a resilience researcher. So I work with different groups, and I do research with different groups who, for different reasons, might experience health inequalities. And the idea is to discover what factors help them to cope successfully with the adversity that they experience, to promote their well-being, health, access to resources and to services.
Wow. So you're all three, if you put all of your time together, you'd be very wise researchers, I would say. So Shan, you described your process a little bit in the background, how you got, how you did your end of it. When you were doing it, was there anything that surprised you?
In terms of the process?
Well, in terms of what the outcome was there... Were there parts that you thought, this is unexpected? Mm-hmm. Was there something that sort of, you know, those aha moments where you go, oh, wow, that I didn't see coming? Mm-hmm. Were any of those moments available?
I will say the very positive outcomes that we observed based on the data that was collected, I was surprised in a very good way, because in my previous research studies, when we've done evaluation, you know, most often it was the case that, you know, the majority, but the fact that everyone who we spoke to, whether they were like the key support network members or the employers themselves, It was all positive when it came to, you know, feeling supported, their needs being met, their quality of life. And it's very interesting that in this project, we had the opportunity to assess quality of life from the perspective of the support network members, but also the employers who were supported by those individuals, and the alignment of the assessments was very, very interesting. So this was a very unique opportunity. Most often you either assess quality of life from the perspective of the support people or from the perspective of individuals with disabilities themselves. But we had the opportunity to actually gather information from the two groups, and the high correlation that we found, the consistent finding that we found, was very interesting. So that's something that stands out for me.
Well, you just validated everything that we kind of knew was true, because that's our feedback on a regular basis. So, Jerry, when you were doing the data, was there something that popped out that surprised you?
Well, in keeping with what Shaheen was saying, the model has been going for decades. So it's
30 to be exact.
Okay. So 30 keeps coming up. Yeah, so it's very long standing, and that's one measure of success is something that's long standing. And just kind of taking, you know, from the data perspective, that almost 3/4 of the people, the employers, have been with the program for 11 or more years. And as well, we've got a long longevity in terms of the key people in the networks as well. Most of the people joined by the time that they were 34 in terms of the employers. They've been with ICOF for, as I said, 11 or more years, and some have been with for more than 21 years. So that is another measure that this is working, because people don't stick around. The other thing is that ICOF does not serve just the people who are easiest to support, because over about 60% are in very high need of support, and yet they're able to manage with support their own lives and activities and that kind of thing, and employ the supports that they make use of.
That is a very important statement, I have to say, because it doesn't matter. There is an assumption, I think, out there for most people that think if you have high support needs, that you have to live within a certain environment. And the people who choose this model do demonstrate that they have some really great lives that because of the way they are supported. So Margarita, was there anything that made you go, aha, ooh, wait, because you did all those great interviews and quality of life with the employers themselves?
Yes, so I'm definitely going to echo what Shaheen said. The interviews were very, very interesting for me. All employers seem to be really advocating for this model. Like, they truly were expressing their enthusiasm about the model, how much they love the model, how much they didn't want anything to happen to the model. Don't change anything, please. We love it. In terms of the data itself, I'm going to echo what Shaheen said. So we do research in this field. We've done research, Shaheen, for longer than me. And we see in the literature that there is not a great degree of alignment between a self-assessment and proxy assessment. So when someone else reports on the quality of life of individuals with disabilities, usually those assessments are either lower, right, or much higher than what the person themselves report. But we saw a perfect alignment in the quality of life assessments between the proxy assessment and the self-assessment. So this is definitely something that speaks of the knowledge that the staff has of the individuals, I think, as well as probably the qualities of the measures that we chose. But yeah, so that was for me the two things that stand out.
One of the questions that I wanted to ask was around quality of life and measuring the ICOF research. It shows that it's higher than the global perspective. So this is open to anybody who want, or all three of you can answer this. Can you tell me a little bit more about the quality of life and how this is compared to the global outcomes and perspectives, which obviously came around when you were pulling this all together? So Do you want to go back
so,
into
yes,
that?
Yes, I'll speak of that. So we used to assess, so as I mentioned, we used a mixed method approach. So we assessed quality of life using interviews with employers, and maybe we can talk about that later. But I think what you're referring to here is the quantitative assessment, which right. was a standardized tool. It's called St. Martin Scale. And we chose this tool because for two reasons. The first one is that it was specifically developed to be used with persons with neurodevelopmental disabilities. And so there's different versions of it. There's one version that can be completed by proxy and one that can be completed as a self-assessment. And the other reason why we chose this tool is that it doesn't only provide an overall quality of life score, but also scores in eight dimensions. So the assessment tool evaluates eight dimensions, which we thought it would be really interesting to do. So the eight dimensions are self-determination, emotional, physical, and material well-being, rights, personal development, social inclusion, and interpersonal relationships. So those eight dimensions are all assessed by the tool. And so we thought this is a really interesting tool because it provides us with the opportunity to not only assess overall quality of life, but the different dimensions, and we can get different scores in the different dimensions. So therefore, it can actually be used for individualized planning. So if we know that someone has self-determination, for example, score that it's lower than average and or lower than the scores that they received in the other dimensions, we can actually do individualized planning with them and see, okay, so why is this happening? How can we improve this score? So what we found in our sample is that overall, as a sample, the 42 employers that we included in this evaluation scored above average, so above what's expected in what was found in similar samples, in all eight quality of life dimensions, as well as in the overall quality of life score, which assesses the overall quality of life, and it takes into account the scores that they received in all eight dimensions.
So the phrase, how does it get any better than this, comes to mind on that one. Do you want to add anything to that, Shan?
I think no? Margarita has okay. spoken to, yes.
Okay. Maybe the only thing that I can add is the highest dimensions were self-determination, material well-being, rights, and social inclusion. And for the listeners, just keep a record of this because this is going to come up also in the qualitative interviews. So this is something that we found also in the qualitative interviews.
Okay. Thank you. So when we were getting this information back, there we were getting excited, but we also know that the researchers got excited with some information that they found as they were doing the work. So Shahin, was there something that excited you that you really weren't expecting that you did a woohoo to? Or something subtle like that.
When our team was asked to take on this evaluation, I was excited because from my previous knowledge, I knew that ICOF is a very unique model of funding, and it's very person-specific, and I was really excited to have the opportunity to learn more about this model of funding for myself, but also to be able to evaluate this. In collaboration with colleagues, but also life staff, and to do a global evaluation. So we actually evaluated different aspects of this model of funding, not only subjectively, but also objectively using some of the standardized tools that were used. So I was really excited about taking on the project.
Good, thank you. Jerry, was there something that excited you about this?
Well, I just like the way that the organization is moving forward with the findings, because that's not always what happens. And so sometimes an evaluation is required by a funder, or it's just kind of done pro forma. But Life Inc. is really making good use of the very positive findings that we got out of this. And as researchers, that's kind of nice to get. It's not just the affirmation, but knowing that there's going to be some good that's going to come out of this, like this podcast, for example.
Well, we didn't want you to do all this work and then not use the good news that came with it. Let's face it, you know. Margarita, was there something that excited you about? You got to talk to employers and hear their personal stories, which I'm sure would have been exciting for you, but was there something else?
That was exciting, and it was. I think the most exciting part for me was the fact that we had all these different components, and the study was really well designed, I think. I know it's our study, but I really think it's well designed. So we had the mixed method. So mixed method studies are not always well done, and if you look at the literature, there's, because they require more resources and more skills, more resources in general, there's less mixed method studies compared to only quantitative or only qualitative. And also the evaluations of the study show that there is a higher percentage of not well done mixed method studies compared to qualitative and quantitative. But so the fact that we had all these different components, we were assessing quality of life using a mixed method approach. We didn't mention that, but we also assessed life satisfaction and financial well-being, and we can talk about that later if you want. So the process and the surveys with different respondents, a mixed method survey, as Jerry mentioned, so quantitative and qualitative questions. So it was really very comprehensive.
Well, since you mentioned what did you mention?
Life satisfaction and financial well-being.
That's the one you mentioned. Yeah, can you expound a little bit on that? Because you're on the roll here, so let's go with it.
Yes, so for life satisfaction and financial well-being, we used standardized assessment tools. So they were only quantitative. It was a closed-ended questionnaire, so questionnaires with multiple choices. And since we were talking about surprising findings, we actually found that 55% of our sample reported their life as been extremely satisfied with their lives, and 40% reported as being satisfied, and only 5% reported being slightly satisfied. So no one said, I'm not satisfied with my life, and 55% extremely satisfied. This might seem not a huge part of the sample to some, but I would bet that if we have a survey, like a general population survey, and we ask people, are you satisfied with your life? How many people do you think are going to say extremely satisfied? I bet you it's going to be less than 55%.
I bet you too.
Right?
Yes, because there are some days I get a 30. It's true.
And in terms of financial well-being, we also found something really interesting. So 95% of the sample, I'm going to repeat that, 95% said that their financial well-being actually was above average. So their answers compared to answers of other people that other people have provided of the same age, right? Things like if you were to have an expenses this month, would that put your budget like out of rack for this month? Or if you were invited to a wedding and you had to buy something expensive for this wedding, would that be a problem for you this month? Well, 90% of our sample said, no, I would be fine. So that also speaks of how the financial part of the program works.
And just to clarify, people don't actually get more money, but because they have control of that money, they get to choose how they're going to spend it along with their support network, so that it's a perception that is being addressed here. And it's a great perception. You know, it does switch things. Anything else, Margarita, that you wanted to add to that? Okay. Jerry, when you were creating the questions with the committee and then putting it out and pulling it all together, what elements were really relevant that you feel like you really need to report on this? You have to share this piece. What was that?
Well, first of all, the surveys were developed in conjunction with the organization, and we went through quite a few revisions on that, which is important because if the questions don't work, nothing works. I just wanted to talk about the per diems, and I want to stress I am a social worker, I'm not an MBA, or accountant, whatever, but numbers are important. And in terms of per diems, the overall per diem average was $355, so that's per day. And that's broken down into five areas: financial administration, health, housing, daily living, and staff and wages. And in terms of the dollars, per diem for everything but staff and wages is basically, it's under $30 per day. and finance administration health care costs. That's around $10 per day or less. The staff wages was an average of $272 per day. When you take a look at the amount of support people need, which was done through a standardized scale, the bulk of our respondents were high need or had extraordinary needs, behavioral, developmental kinds of needs. And you know, just talking about the per diems to support people through ICOF, the average global per diem was $355. And that's broken into five areas: finance administration, healthcare, housing, daily living, and staff wages. And in terms of finance and administration and health costs, that per diem is around $10 or under. Housing is about $33 on average. Daily living is $35. It's the staff wages at $272 per day. So that's the global. And then we did an analysis based on the amount of supports people need. Anyway, it's a validated scale that's used. And what we found is that the program, it was actually used mostly by people who had extraordinary levels of need, both in terms of development and behavior. And still, you know, based on what Margarita was saying, they're feeling very satisfied with the amount of control they have over their lives, over their finance, even given the high levels of need that they've got. The differences in terms of the five areas that I just mentioned did not vary significantly based on people's, it's called SIS levels. And it goes from, one is the lowest, meaning they need the least amount of support, to seven, which is the highest. And that's where getting into extraordinary behavioral challenges and intellectual challenges and that kind of thing. So it's just in terms of staff wages where you see a statistically significant difference in the costs. And the highest costs are for people who are at level seven. And those people would generally be seen, I think, in more of an institutional setting, as opposed to the kinds of supports that people are getting through ICOF. And so the highest per diem is $351 for people at level seven. And for those at levels one to three, it was $135 per day and under for that. So I think that's an important difference. Now, the thing is that we don't know necessarily how that compares to people who are living in more traditional group homes, and which is a different model entirely, or in facilities and that kind of thing. So that would be an interesting thing to look at. So basically, the people who are getting the most support have the highest per diems at $351 a day, but it really kind of varies by their level of need.
Well, so far, we've been talking about a lot of positive, and there was most definitely a lot of positive experiences and outcomes when it comes to using the In the Company of Friends funding and support model. But we all know life isn't perfect, and every once in a while, there are things that don't work out so well. So let's take a look at what we could improve just slightly, because we always talk about what is working and how do we make it better. So, Shan, when we reflect back, there was a lot of positive, but what did you pick out that was challenging for both the employers and the support networks and some of the other surrounding areas that came with that?
Sure. So maybe I will speak from the perspective of the employers, what they reported as being some of the challenges, and maybe Jerry would be able to speak into the, you know, challenges or let's say areas for improvement from the perspective of the support network members. So from the perspective of the employers themselves, although as all of us so far reflected on, based on the evidence from our study, the employers were very satisfied with their life, right? They assessed their quality of life to be very high. But having said all of that, there were a few areas that they reported that there is room for improvement. For example, finding and retaining a staff was one of the issues that the employers reported that sometimes they have to deal with. Also, their mental health needs. So it seems like there is room for improvement to maybe do further work to improve and address the mental health needs of the employers who are supported in this funding model. And for some involving family members, there were some issues around that. So again, providing family members with the resources that they need to come and to be able to continue to provide the support. Although for most part, as we mentioned, you know, all of these, and for the majority, these supports were available. But these were some of the challenges that were identified through the conversations, the interviews that were conducted with the employers themselves.
Well, and you know, when you mentioned family, sometimes having family in your life as a continuous process is great, but it can also be a hindrance because family sometimes thinks you ought to lead your life a certain way, and it doesn't matter whether you have a label of a developmental disability or not.
But also, it's the issue of aging, right?
Right.
So aging of the family members.
Right.
And as it was mentioned, one of the strengths of this model and one of the things that we were surprised, I was surprised in a very good way, was to see the majority of the employers in this model, they've been involved and participating for such a long time. For a family member to be involved in supporting their loved ones for such a long time, but they may get to the age that they may not be able to provide what they used to. So it's the issue of aging of the family members themselves.
I see. Thanks for clarifying that. And as a family member who continues to age, I totally understand. Jerry, was there any you want to add to that?
Yeah, so... And this is part of the survey, so and these are the key network members. So 53% said finding and keeping staff was a problem or a challenge experienced by their employers. But all of the others are just answered by one or two people. So, you know, in terms of employers' mental health needs or conditions involving family members, addressing networking issues and that kind of thing, it's really just one or two people who mentioned that. But as a follow-up, we asked what changes people would like to see in the ICOF model of funding, if they could have those. And the top three were increase in wages for staff. And we actually did an analysis of how satisfied people were with the amount of money that was available for basic needs and then for staffing. And people were very positive in terms of the basic needs funding, that was sufficient or very sufficient, but that consistent with this finding in terms of increase for wages for staff, they felt that there would be a needed increase for that. So it probably hasn't been increased for a while. That was followed by an increase in the number of network supports. So when we looked at how many people were in each network, there was one network with one person, which is not really a network. It's a pair. And so that was caused by people, I guess, aging out or going, you know, retiring and moving. But I think they went up to 12 members at the other end. So that's really the span is from 1 to 12. So the average was about 6 or 7 members. So an increase in the number of support members, 18% said no changes were needed. And then went down, stay with the original ICOF format. So that's basically the same thing as saying don't change anything. Increase the number of employers involved, so get more people into the program because they were so positive about it that they wanted to be able to share that model with other people who may be living in group homes or other kinds of situations. So really, I mean, even the changes they would make, they're constructive, and nothing really popped out as a red flag.
Did you add anything to that, Margarita?
I can add something that reflects what Jerry and Shaheen said in terms of the support networks. I remember one participant mentioning in the qualitative interview that she was not very happy with her support network, and I think I was listening to Jerry talking and I'm like, well, this is like life. Like, it reflects what life is. Like, right? Some of us have bigger friends groups, right? Some of us have smaller networks. So I think what we found is that really, like, the people we interviewed and the people who participate in our study are reflective of, like, what the general population is and what life is for everyone.
Which is exactly what we're headed to or wanting, right? We want people to have lives that reflect the average life and not to be segregated.
Well, let me tell you, a little bit above average in a lot of way. But yes,
yeah,
other ways it reflects, yeah.
Because we have to, the dynamics of human to human, personality to personality, is always going to be there. And friendships change in our lives. I'm always envious of people who have lifetime, like from kindergarten on. I go, how do you do that? Because I've grown out of those relationships. I know myself, right? But it is. It's, you know, we're always dealing with
changes,
the dynamics of changes of life in general. You know? And it isn't, you know, innovative life options. It's life. If you were putting a family lens to this research and you wanted to identify one or two must-knows for families, what would those be? We'll start with you, Margarita. I blanked on your name. There's a skill set. I've warned people I'm lousy on names. What would you say to that?
First of all, know that this program, this model of support is available. I think that that's the first thing, really, because when we started, we didn't really know the model and you know, knowing that this is possible, it is possible to offer independent living options to your children, right? It's important to know, because sometimes people don't have all the information that they need, right, to make an informed choice. So right. I think that's really important, and that there are supports available for them.
Good. Thank you. I'm going to also ask you, if you were a program developer in government or community.
Oh, my gosh. No, I'm good in my research.
You wouldn't tell
behind
them.
Behind my...
But what would you tell them about that? I mean, if you're in government and you're not sharing information on this particular model.
I think that it's really obvious from what we said. We would recommend this option for whenever it's possible, really, because the results that we found were really, really positive in all the dimensions that we assessed.
Thank you, Shahin. Would you add anything around a family lens or any other lens that you think is important for those who might be listening? Because yes, this is geared to families, this particular podcast, but we also will be sharing it in other areas of.
Sure. So I think what we found in this study, I hope to assure family while looking for maybe a viable option for the loved one. So based on what we found, we highly recommend the ICOF as a viable option, finding that individuals who are supported in this model, they are enjoying good quality of life. But at the same time, they are empowered. They are really living to their full potential. So it's not the fact that, you know, they've been cared for, but they are actively. In fact, they do have control over their lives. And I think that's the unique aspect of this model. So given the results of our assessments, this is a model that is working. It may not work for every family, for everyone, but for those who would be able to put in the supports needed, it is a viable option. So I would like to see that more for families to be informed that this is a viable option. This is what we found, and that's important. In terms of those who are involved in developing the policies or offering the programs, what we found, although we didn't have the comparative data officially to compare the numbers, but what we found in terms of the costs, per diem costs for individuals supported in this model, based on my experience in being involved on some other projects and some other models of support, I know that the per diem kind of costs are within the range. But what stands out for me is that the quality of life of the individuals who are supported in this model, it's been way better than what we have seen for individuals supported in, for example, group homes, even here in Manitoba, through our other studies. So I will say that This is not really a costly model, but it's a model that allows individuals to have control over their lives and for them to be able to enjoy their life.
Thank you. We always, at Innovative Life Options as a board, often will say the Vulnerable Persons Act, when we compare that to In the Company of Friends and the people that use that, they're living in alignment to that, the guidelines within the Act. So, Jerry, anything that you would add to that?
Going back to the survey data, which I guess is my role here. So we looked at this from two points of view. We looked at it from the respondents, meaning the primary network members. 100% felt that the employers were treated with respect and that the model supports employers to live the lives they want to live, integrated into their communities. So community integration is actually happening, and that's a really important factor. It strives to enhance the employer's quality of life, ensuring that support networks are person-oriented, person-centered. People, the employers, can explore their options, and the self-determination and support networks are individualized. Now, when we asked in terms of an open-ended question, what did the respondents identify as the strengths? Four things popped out. It's person-centered and individualized. Employers can live the lives they choose. It encourages independence and self-sufficiency, and it's the supports that it provides its employers. So we haven't talked about the supports, but there are about 12 or so different kinds of supports that the networks provide to their employers, and I think it's about an average of 10 different kinds of supports. So it's quite all-encompassing in that way.
And I think it's important to note that, as it was mentioned, this is based on the research that's been done during pandemic. And still people are saying that, you know, these individuals are. So that's something to keep in mind.
What would you add to?
Well, I did want to add something. I think it's really important, and this really comes out of the interviews, right? So the quality of life, life satisfaction. So our study participants, like the model does not, how can I say this, does not provide anything that it's like out of the ordinary. In the sense that it's like people talked about being able to choose what they could eat every day, choose who they want to spend their time with, what activities they want to perform every day, being able to live alone and not having to share their home with people they don't know, right? So when you talked about what would you say to policymakers, well, it's doable. It's like it's a paradigm shift, though. Right? I really like that expression. Like, it's like being able to see these people as being able to make choices for themselves, being capable of choosing for themselves and say, okay, I would rather live here than there. And this is something that it's a matter of rights. And
it is a basic human right to be able to choose what you want to do and how you want to spend your day. Most certainly.
And they even get to choose their supports.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. And they get to hire their staff. Them.
Being able to hire their staff, right? Yes. For us, it's like, well, okay, so you're able to hire your own staff. What's the big deal? Well, this staff, it's not like someone who comes to your home 1 hour a week or once a month. This is someone who's going to spend with you a lot of time. So I think we all would like to choose, right, who we spend our time with.
Well, and when Jerry mentioned about the staff turnover, one of the reasons, of course, was that the salary that they were getting wasn't enough, and so the turnover was legitimately happening. But they have increased it, and now they are getting a livable wage, and hopefully that will sort of settle things, and staff will stay around because they do have a livable wage now.
This is also very common in other organizations that's in this field, though. Staff turnover is an issue for these organizations as well, not just for life.
That's true. That's very true. And we move on for all kinds of reasons, too.
You know. People don't go into this field to get rich.
No, they don't. It is a calling to work in this field, whether you're doing research or you're supporting somebody to be in the field of developmental and intellectual disabilities and supporting people who are considered vulnerable. That is a calling. If you're called to it, you know, make your big money somewhere else. Before we sort of wrap up, because we are getting to our time, is there anything that you think you would add that you might have missed?
Well, the qualitative interviews.
Yes, go ahead. Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, we did.
We skipped those. So as I mentioned, I interviewed nine employers, and I asked them very similar questions. We tried to create a guide, an interview guide that included, and we did that in collaboration with our group, with our research group. And we tried to create an interview guide that included questions on all the eight quality of life domains that I mentioned, which were the quality of life domains that are assessed through the assessment tools. And as I mentioned, all employers talked very positively about their lives in all the eight quality of life domains. They mentioned things like being able to choose for themselves, choosing where to live, choosing their direct staff, and being able to hire or let them go whenever they wanted. We specifically had a questions about, can you refuse to do things that you don't want to do? Because we thought that was really important for us to assess. And they all said, oh yeah, of course, we can decide. And I remember one person who was almost like surprised by my question, like, why are you asking me that? That's my basic right. Like, that's, of course I can, right? So we thought that was really interesting. And so that was it. So they all spoke very highly of their lives.
Shahan?
And if I just may add that, I think the questions that were asked were very clear questions. Mm-hmm. I just want to thank everyone on the team, but also the steering committee who helped mm-hmm. us to ask the right questions, because we got very rich qualitative data. So it wasn't just asking them questions and getting, you know, very brief responses. We actually got to people actually responded in depth and in a very meaningful way about their experience and their lives. So I just want to take a minute to thank the members of the steering committee, the staff who knew these individuals for us to ask the right questions in the right way.
Oh, thank you.
And I think this is another strength of our study. I'm just selling our study like it's the best. But yeah, I think this is another strength, and this is how our group likes to work. So we do participatory research. So we do work in collaboration with staff, with family members, even persons who are the group that we're researching, persons with neurodevelopmental disabilities. So being able to do that kind of research, I think, really, really leads to more meaningful results.
Well, and we chose really, really well then, didn't we? Yeah. So, Jerry, any last thought that you might want to add to this that you haven't gotten around to talking about yet?
Well, it's kind of borrowing from something that Shaheen said right at the beginning, that all of the data, including from the interviews and the validated scales and the survey research, were internally consistent. Everything was pointing in the same direction. Everything that was a positive in one aspect of the research was repeated in different aspects. And from a research perspective, that's really important. And it really does paint a picture of this as a really optimal model. I'm trying to find the words here, but not getting choked up or anything. But it's a really viable model, and it's an optimal model, and it's something that should be expanded, should be made available in other jurisdictions as well. I get into marketing here, but there are really no drawbacks mm-hmm. to this model that I can think. I don't know if the others
see any
drawbacks.
Yeah. Well, we agree. And as woohoo, how does it get any better than this? Is again a repeat on that.
Let me tell you, finding three researchers who agree on the same thing, it's quite complicated. Quite rare.
Well, then it's even a bigger plus, you know, that we got great research product, we had the great researchers to do the product, and, you know, it's I'm thrilled that you were able to get here and do this recording with me. And by all means, push the way you're doing the research, and push the In the Company of Friends funding and support model. I'm all with that. So thank you for being here, and thank you for answering these amazing questions, and in a way that verifies and validates what we've always known and hopefully we'll be in touch. Maybe, you know, you can do that comparison thing. Anyway, thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.
I hope this conversation was an enjoyable listen for you. Perhaps we've left you with a lot of information to unpack. We can assist with that. At Innovative Life Options, we offer a pathway to self-determination so that individuals with an intellectual disability, their families, and their support networks can take control of their own lives, make their own choices, and self-manage a unique life plan. We provide the framework so you can choose the help you want, because we believe that all people with an intellectual disability deserve the opportunity to direct their best life. When you choose a self-directed life, you're not the recipient of care and support. You're the self-empowered creator. If you have questions or would like more information about us, you can phone toll-free 1-866-516-5445, email info@icof-life.ca, or if you prefer, visit our website, innovativelifeoptions.ca. Thanks for listening. And if you want, keep the conversation going.